Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Legal, actually joining us to talk about the Trump administration's latest attack on LGBTQ plus people, specifically trans people, though. But of course, as we said yesterday, Shira is actually out of town. She is in Canada in the Montreals visiting family and doing some real like boss lady type stuff. But joining us, we have a pop culture and political journalist and now new co-host of Drop the Subject with Jarrett and Allie, which... Hello. Jarrett Hill joining me today. Welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
No, I'm actually very excited to have you just here. And just now you have a new upgrade to your thing. Because before you were like an expert just hopping in on the shows being like, oh, I'm super smart. I can do this.
I never said that, but okay.
But now you have like you're literally a new co-host. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's exciting. It was announced on Monday and we had a big company event yesterday. And yeah. They brought it out at that as well. It's a very fun and exciting. I feel like I've been, you know, like the cousin here at the at Channel Q for
very
a little while,
and now
I feel
cousin.
Like now I feel like I guess I'm a sibling. I don't know if that
you're
works.
You're just a cousin that we, you know, was in foster care, and now we've adopted. And
okay,
you're,
first of
you're
all,
now integrated into
all,
the family.
You know what? I'll take that. I'll take that.
It's like a very This Is Us story.
Exactly, right. So, no, but it's been really great. Allie and I do a show every day from 12 to 2 called Drop the Subject, where we talk about politics stories. We talk about pop culture stories. We talked about, like, the crazy stories that are things that are happening every day.
Yeah.
So that happens from 12 to 2 Pacific time. We're on from 3 to 5 Eastern time. You can obviously find us everywhere that you find Channel Q. And, yeah, we're having a really good time with it.
Here's the thing, though. I really want to know, you know, Jarrett, we've done the show. We've spent like almost like 2 weeks together.
3 weeks almost.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks yeah. together doing the show. Can you just say here now on an official statement
I know where this is going.
That I am the, like you love being with me more than you love being with Allie? I think it just needs to be said. We have so much chemistry. It's very hot.
I love doing Let's Go There with you more than anything else.
You heard it here first, guys.
And I love doing Drop the Subject
okay,
with Allie.
All right. That
more
doesn't
than
even
anything
really
else.
Need to be said or anything.
Yeah, I was like, I can make a distinction there and still say what you want me to say.
No, I'm so excited that you joined the Channel Q family. And I know everyone, our listeners, they love hearing you as well. You're just so smart. Aww. And I truly mean that. Don't think I'm going to be nice to you for the rest of the show.
So, like, listen, I'm basking in it because okay. I know it's going to die any moment. So.
Let's get into what's trending top of the hour news. Now, we have a lot happening. So fresh off a 62-day incarceration for defying a grand jury subpoena, Chelsea Manning, the former U.S. Army intelligence analyst and anti-secrecy activist, was remanded again this afternoon after a federal judge held her in contempt of court. Now, United States Marshals took Manning back into custody at the U.S. District Courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, Thursday afternoon after she refused to cooperate yet again with a subpoena to testify before another secret federal grand jury. Manny said she was prepared to return to jail indefinitely rather than testifying. Now, honey, that is a ride or die chick. She is a whistleblower. She's like, I snitched. I did what I had to do. Clink, lock me up.
Well, I think the interesting thing with this story is the fact that we see someone who was subpoenaed that didn't do what they were told
right.
and is now in contempt.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did? Like, this person is going to jail.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, people have to follow rules and laws, you know?
Some people do.
You know, some. But next, the federal government will actually be spending an additional $16 billion to help farmers hurt by the U.S.-China trade war. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue announced that today. U.S. farmers have been among the hardest hit by the escalating trade war between the two countries, and both sides are bracing for additional pain resulting from the latest volley of tariffs announced earlier this month. Now, this is something interesting because Trump is the reason why this is all happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so now yeah. they're trying to fix everything. Now, Perdue said President Donald Trump approved the farmer aid to undermine China's efforts to retaliate against U.S. tariffs. This is what they said. President Trump feels that what they're trying to do is really outlast him, and that's not going going to work. Their economy has hurt a lot more than our agricultural economy, and that's why President Trump has authorized a $16 billion facilitation program. Now, he said that this morning on Fox Business. Trump has already warned that he is prepared to impose additional tariffs on the remainder of Chinese exports to the U.S., a move that would hit consumer goods like toys and electronics that were spared in the first round.
Interesting point, since we're just going to point out interesting things here.
Yes, please.
Tariffs went into effect, I believe, last week on Monday or Tuesday. Uh-huh. And we've already figured out how to help the farmers.
Before.
Two words, Puerto Rico.
I mean, I really feel like Trump needs to go back to school to find out. But guess what, guys? Puerto Rico is actually
part of the country.
Yeah, we're supposed to be helping.
Yeah. And I guess it's interesting to me, like, how hard it is to find the money for certain things and how easy it is to find the money for things for people in states that voted for you.
Yes. I mean, we have still so much to go in, because in its latest attack on LGBTQ plus people, the administration of Donald Trump, specifically the Department of Housing and Urban Development, you know, OREOs, headed by the Ben Carson guy.
Jesus Christ.
He wants to allow homeless shelters to discriminate against transgender clients. We're going to be joined by Carl Charles, a staff attorney from Lambda Legal, where he's going to be unpacking all of this, because this just doesn't seem fair, and it just honestly feels at this point that we are going to be, our community and the people that are inside of this community are just going to be taken advantage of and just be screwed over all the time.
I'll remind you that Donald Trump, during his campaign, he sat on the Today Show with those hosts and told the world that he'd be an ally to transgender people.
He sure did. Didn't he hold a pride flag at one point?
Probably.
I remember there's a photo of him like holding a pride flag during his campaign, and that's when he was saying, I love gay people. I love all these things. It was like, you're promising so much, but then we're seeing this in your actions, especially by a guy that doesn't even know what an REO is.
So
we have so much to get into. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so Trump and this administration, of course, has done everything that they can do to really roll back on equal rights when it comes to the LGBTQ plus community. And specifically, not just the LGBTQ, but it seems like everything has really been targeted towards the trans community.
Yeah, I think it's at the risk of sounding disparaging, I think trans folks are the lowest hanging fruit.
Oh, for
sure. Because they are like the most newly accepted into society. And,
right.
And being gay has been something that has been in the national discourse for a lot longer.
Yeah.
And I think being trans is something that people are only just starting to really address and accept and embrace and ask questions about.
Yeah.
So I think they're the easiest people to attack right now.
Well, the scary thing is the Trump administration yesterday announced its plans to deny transgender people experiencing homelessness equal access to shelters. Now, this new proposed rule, however, would allow shelter providers to consider a range of factors in making such determinations, including privacy, safety, practical concerns, religious beliefs, any relevant considerations under civil rights and non-discrimination authorities, the individual's sex as reflected in official government documents, as well as the gender which a person identifies with. And even HUD Secretary Ben Carson plans to weaken those provisions and other protections for transgender people seeking access to HUD programs. He said this: "I'm not going to say what we will do in the future about anything. I'm not currently anticipating changing the rule," and by that rule he means the equal access rule. Now, we have so many questions, and really we want to bring this to everyone's attention. So joining us in this conversation is Carl Charles. He is a staff attorney from Lambda Legal. Thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan and Jared.
Thanks for being here. The first question I want to ask about this is more of a 35,000 foot level question, because I feel like we've seen all these abortion laws happening in every state, and we know that the long game for that is Roe v. Wade and like wanting to take that to the Supreme Court. I'm curious, in the legal community, what is the conversation about what the long game is on transgender, the attack on transgender people, and maybe broader on LGBTQ people?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys summed it up correctly in that we've really seen a targeted attack against transgender people by this administration. And Wednesday's announcement that the Department of Housing and Urban Development plans to rescind this equal access rule is really just the most cruel, really, attack against a really vulnerable population of people at in fact, their most vulnerable moments. And so, sadly, we've really come to expect that from this administration. And you know, I think they are, in some ways, using the trans community as a bargaining chip. If we're talking about the 35,000-foot view, we in the trans community are resilient, but we're also a minority of people that many people might not know or understand yet. And so they're really taking advantage of that.
Wow. And I think the scary thing about this is, I mean, three trans women of color were recently, I mean, just killed this week. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is a lot of the same story for a lot of other trans women and women of color. Why, you know, do you think, especially in this world, and I really want to dive into the Equality Act, if that passes, how could that also affect this rule and this act that they're trying to do?
Yeah, so what, you know, what the Equality Act brings to the forefront of this discussion is that current anti-discrimination precedent already prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, but the Equality Act would basically make that really, really clear, and we think it would also act as a preventative, right? So we know that federal anti-discrimination law can be used after someone experiences discrimination, but having the Equality Act set in stone is really going to communicate in advance, right, to employers, to people who are providers of housing, to people who run places of public accommodation, theaters, hotels, etc., that this kind of discrimination is really not accepted.
So looking at this provision that we're talking about with Ben Carson specifically, what would this actually entail? Does this mean that individual shelters could discriminate in different ways? Because that's how I interpreted
right.
what I was seeing is like they will be able to make a distinction. And if they determine that they don't want to let you in because you're trans, that won't be protected under the law. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, so essentially, this rule, the rescission of this rule would basically act as a permission slip, right? It would embolden people who are already inclined to discriminate against trans folks in the provision of housing and emergency shelter, homeless shelters and other emergency shelters. It would act as a permission slip, right? So it's not a mandate. It's not a requirement that people discriminate, but it gives them cover. It allows them to do it and to consider these things that are really prohibited under such federal laws like the Fair Housing Act.
So this is similar wow. to the way that Indiana enacted their Religious Freedom Act and back when Mike Pence was their governor and saying that, you know, companies or organizations could deny service to someone if they felt like it was infringing on their religious rights.
Yeah.
And it's similar to that in that way. Like it's more of a permission slip than a mandate.
Exactly. We want to be really clear with people. This is still a proposal at this point, and coming up next will be a notice and comment period where all of the public, and in fact, all of the public should weigh in on this and tell the Department of Housing and Urban Development what a terrible idea this is. And of course, all of the advocacy groups are going to submit very long comments, Lambda Legal, of course, chief among them, explaining why this is really terrible, right?
Yeah.
We know that LGBT people are overrepresented in the population of people experiencing homelessness. And in fact, we know that of the youth who are in and experiencing homelessness, 40% of those youth identify as LGBTQ.
Yeah.
So this law or this proposal is just so backwards and is a real it poses a real threat to the most vulnerable in our community.
Now, I really want to touch and highlight before we wrap this up, how can, you know, people get involved legally? Because if you're thinking about homeless youth and LGBTQ people that are struggling daily, they won't have any money to really, you know, afford legal expenses. So how is Lambda Legal getting involved? And I just want to highlight that.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So, you know, a colleague of mine summed it up really well for me. We don't see much, we don't see many lawsuits filed on behalf of people who are in need of housing because your primary focus is, I don't have time to file a lawsuit. I need a place to live. So that's why we really need community members with time and resources and energy to really chip into this effort. So I encourage everyone listening to reach out to the local LGBT groups in your community, in your city and state. Those folks are going to have connections to shelters that provide LGBTQ-specific programming and bed access. And we need everyone to raise your voice about this issue. We, of course, at Lambda Legal will be fighting this fight at every opportunity. And if, you know, if you would like to support our work in doing that, you're, of course, more than welcome to. But we're going to be taking this proposal head on. But folks can also, in addition to supporting what we're doing sort of at the big picture level, you can dive in your community. And we really need everyone to do that.
Our hope is that with something like this, if it were to come to fruition, that this became policy, that, you know, people, good folks out there and good organizations would come and step in to fill the gap for those folks that would be displaced by it. But we really appreciate you being able to lend a voice to this and helping us understand what it means.
Of course. Thank you both for the opportunity. And we'll all be fighting back against this, I know. So thanks again.
No, thank you. And once again, that was Carl Charles, a staff attorney from Lambda Legal. Now, we are switching gears. And when we come back, we're going to be letting you know how to win two tickets to J-Lo's concert at the Forum, honey. And then, of course, we got to get into what's the TR pop culture entertainment stories of the day. And you know the jean brand Wrangler? Well, they're receiving a ton of, I'm just going to say it, racist backlash. And the country community just feels very upset. That's all happening in 7 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so we're back.
So we're back. Yes, we are. And you have the opportunity to win tickets to see Jennifer Lopez at the Forum. Head to wearechannelq.com for your chance to win tickets to see J-Lo at the Forum. I'm so excited. I live close to the Forum, and I'm like, can I go to see J-Lo at the Forum?
It's actually my favorite venue. The sound is just better.
It's fantastic. Yeah. If you don't know the Forum is the old state arena where the Lakers used to play back in the day before they were at the Staples Center.
The Lakers used to play at the Forum?
Yeah, before they were at the Staples Center.
I feel like the Forum's big enough.
Well, that's why they moved to the Staples Center. They moved to a bigger venue.
Yeah.
But the Forum is such a great place for concerts and things like that because it's not enormous, and so you don't feel like you're, you know, a mile away from the person. It's a really, really great venue. So, the prize is two tickets on either June 7th or June 8th at the Forum. Go to wearechannelq.com for more information and get those tickets. Can we get tickets to that?
Of course. I mean, feel like probably.
We should know somebody.
Honey, I danced with the cake that Live Nation sent us for J-Lo's birthday, so they better give me some tickets.
Okay. Well, there we go.
I worked hard for that. You should have saw my twerk.
So you'll probably.
Actually, the video is on We Are Channel Q on Twitter. You should check it out.
Well, you'll probably see us there then because I want to be there. Getting into what's trending, it is the story that I was saying earlier today on our show, as a journalist, like there's always a debate about whether or not you call something racist or racially changed or whatever. And like lately, a lot of journalists have been calling things racist when they are.
Finally, it's
this
about time.
Story
and it's also What's the Tea, by the way.
What's the Tea? Sorry.
I'm
pinch hitting here. in What's the Tea, we're talking about this story. The headline comes from Page Six and the writer is Chris Perez. It says Wrangler's collab with rapper Lil Nas X is getting boycotted by country fans. Wrangler came under fire this week after launching a denim collaboration with rapper Lil Nas X, which was inspired by his hit song Old Town Road. Now, you might remember Old Town Road was a song that he recorded and released and hit the charts and then was taken off of the country charts because people were saying that it wasn't country enough. And there was a debate around whether or not that was racially even focused. Fans have started boycotting the American manufacturer, claiming true cowboys would never wear those new Wranglers or listen to Lil Nas X. They've been saying, quote, this is how you lose customers. Another person said, went from cowboys to rappers.
It's honestly wild to me that, and I don't want to say just white people, but because I don't want to, you know, but it feels like country fans are, it's wild to me that country fans are so, they're willing to just shine everyone out that they feel like doesn't fit in. I mean, they did that with Beyonce, but unfortunately, they haven't even done it it's really weird to me that they didn't even do it to Nelly. Like Nelly is
with
like
Tim McGraw, yeah.
Yeah, it's like they pick and choose and it depends on how black are you.
Well, I mean, we're in a really polarized time right now, right? And like, there's no way to look at this story story and not see the clearly racist implications of this, right?
Right.
He did this song that is like celebrating his love of country and how, you know, how he really was inspired and influenced by it. And like, realistically, like, white country music fans have been really coming against him. It says those who support the collaboration have called the outrage racist, obviously, with some social media users saying that it's only coming from white people and rednecks. Someone said online, quote, "You people are talking as if Wrangler only makes clothes for the ones who live at the cowboy, live the cowboy lifestyle. Grow up."
And it's so annoying because there's also this crossover thing where I feel like Post Malone can do anything he wants and can be on, like, can be given an award to be like in, you know, best hip hop album or best this. But then when we're going over to, you know, country music and there's a black artist that is actually dominating and kind of elevating in, like, I don't know, it feels very revolutionary in a way. Taking it to new heights that country hasn't really been. It's interesting how people will shut it down and then say, oh my God, this is how you lose, like, you know, basically people that will buy the customers. It's very weird and out, like, just outwardly racist.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of makes me want to go buy Wranglers, and I don't even wear Wranglers. Like,
I have never owned a pair of Wranglers.
I may have had them as a kid, but I can't say that I have. But, like, the idea that...
Those pants are cute, though. They have "On My Booty."
Yeah, I was going to say, they have all kinds of different lyrics written on them. And I guess for me, I see the story and I think to myself, like, what is the expectation that Wrangler can only appeal to a country audience?
Yeah.
But also,
and what,
like,
does that really mean? Not even just a country audience. It seems like it can only appeal to a Caucasian audience.
I mean, a white audience that is a country listening audience that wants what they want. So, I mean, I think the story is so clearly racist.
Yeah.
That, you know, white country fans that are out there tweeting and boycotting, like, there's no way to look at what you're doing as anything other than racist.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, there's so much there to unpack. But we have a lot more coming up in What's the Tea. Actually, so our good friends at GLAAD just released its annual Studio Responsibility Index that holds film studios accountable for more LGBTQ+ representation. Now, joining us to unpack that and chat more in 6 minutes is Megan Townsend, the Director of Entertainment Research and Analysis. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, honey, we are back. And we are still in What's the Tea, and joining me, actually filling in for Shira Lazar, is Jared Hill from Drop the Subject with Jared and Allie.
Hey, that's me.
I wanted to reintroduce you because I know our voices are similar and I know people will get confused.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, okay, so today, actually, this morning, I went to an amazing, breakfast with GLAAD. They invited me to, they basically unpacked their annual Studio Responsibility Index, and it maps the quality, and diversity of LGBTQ people in films released by the 7 largest motion picture studios and their subsidiaries during the 2018 calendar year. And this is so important to really talk about in media, because we are in media in some ways and we have this platform. But it's so important to acknowledge that representation is much needed. And joining us to talk about this and really what this means for this industry is Megan Townsend, Director of Entertainment Research and Analysis. My tongue. I'm tired. I've been up at 8. Hi, Megan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
No, of course, girl. I mean, y'all had me wake up at 6 o'clock this morning. I'm happy the free food was there.
It was an early morning. I fully understand.
That's why the tongue twister, you know.
So, Megan, tell us about this report that you guys put together and what the mission of it is.
Sure. So our Studio Responsibility Index, this what dropped today, was our 7th edition. And one of our co-creators of the report and the lead author on it. So it looks at the quantity, quality, and diversity of LGBTQ representation in films from the previous calendar year from the 7 major studios. And the reason that we kind of created the report was that GLAAD has kind of tracked inclusion in television for decades now, going back to the mid-90s, the year before Ellen was even out on TV. And we've seen how that conversation changed and how having these kind of hard numbers and historical trends really shaped that conversation and has moved things forward in television. But we really saw that film nobody was having that conversation, really,
yeah.
In terms of LGBTQ representation. And so we decided that if it worked so well for us on the TV side, why not come up with something on the film side? And we created methodology, and we created our Vito Russo test, and have just kind of moved forward from there.
So we said that it's about quantity and quality of representation. What is quantity is obviously easy to figure out, but what do you mean by quality when you say that?
Yeah, so when we are looking at the quality of stories, we are thinking about things in terms of, are the stories that we are seeing from these studios all, are they all tropes? Are they stereotypes? Are the characters a punchline? Do they have, you know, agency over their own story? Do they have any kind of development, or do they more exist as, you know, a prop for a different character's growth?
Interesting.
So those are the kind of things that that we're looking at, and I think is one thing that really, you know, there's so many different organizations now who are doing, you know, studies on representation, and one thing that I think is really different about this report in particular is that there is such an amount of kind of analysis and critique that goes into this with, you know, talking about how the numbers obviously are part of the story, and we hope to see more, and we hope to see more diversity in those characters. But it also has to do with the quality and what kind of stories are being told, and if, you know, those characters are nuanced and realistic in that kind of portrayal, or if, you know, what we're seeing is more all negative stories or stereotypes. So that is something that we really dig into here.
Because that does go into representation, right? Like a nuanced story where people can actually feel like they're represented. But I think, which is very interesting out of the data that you guys presented, of the 110 films released by the seven largest studios in 2018, 18.2% had LGBTQ characters, and that actually went up from 2017, where it only had 12.8%. With queer diversity. With this, I think this is amazing. I think when we talk about LGBTQ people, I think a lot of times the conversations are very geared towards white people and that and their storylines and how they're presented in media. Can we speak about the like racial diversity when it comes to tests and studies like this?
Sure. So one thing that our reports have always focused on, both our television and our film report, is making sure that when we're looking at this, that we're also looking for, you know, stories that reflect the full diversity of the community. LGBTQ people are also people of color. We're also people with disabilities, people with different religions, queer women, trans people. Like, those are all, you know, things that we're concerned with. So when we came up with the methodologies for these reports, that was something that was always important for us to make sure that we were also kind of gathering data around so that we could find, are there specific voices or experiences or people who are being left out of the story here?
Yeah.
So with this year, we did find, unfortunately, a significant drop in the percentage of LGBTQ characters who were people of color. It went down 15 percentage points to 42% from 57% the previous year in 2017 films. But with that said, one kind of notable improvement that we did see was that there was a number of Asian Pacific Islander LGBTQ characters, which was a positive increase because the year before that had a complete lack of any character of that experience.
Do you feel like an index like this really holds studios accountable? Because, I mean, there's data here showing that they're lacking in diversity when I feel like a lot of these companies say, oh, no, we have diversity. We are all about inclusion. But sometimes, obviously, we're not seeing that in the numbers.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the numbers are kind of hard to argue with, but I think that the bigger thing that these kind of reports do, both our film report and our TV report, is give a kind of look at the overall slate. I know that, you know, obviously my job includes watching and researching all of this stuff, and not everybody is necessarily always looking at that. So it's easy for people to have a different picture in their mind of how something looks based off of, you know, oh, I watch only four TV shows and they all have queer characters, so everything is fine. Or, you know, I watched these three movies last year and they all had queer characters, so aren't we, you know, winning in film? But when you're doing a full kind of picture with these reports, I think it gives that kind of eye to the entire slate and to everything that a studio is putting out as their slate and what they're investing in and what they're putting their money and marketing efforts towards, and really kind of lets us see, okay, overall, this is how many stories you did, this is where you maybe missed some marks, and let's have a discussion now on how that can change for next year.
So the last thing I want to ask you here is, I'm actually working on a story right now where I'm talking to the different heads of different networks and talking to them about diversity and inclusion. And one of the questions that I'm always asking is, you know, how are you measuring your success and how are you setting benchmarks for yourselves? And all of the answers that I keep getting back from all of these major networks is always, we want it to be organic. We want it to be something that, you know, is a part of our culture, and we want it to be. And I said to one of them in the conversation, you know, I understand what you're saying, but really that comes across as there is no plan.
Right.
How would you respond to something like that, considering you do this work every day?
I think that there has to be, you know, one of the things that we run into the most often is that people, you know, get something to the finish line and they're at the point of putting out a project or a trailer, and then all of a sudden they hit pushback, and then, you know, they realize that through, you know, they maybe had good intentions, but they just didn't fully know what they were stepping into, or that they say that nobody ever raised that point. So I think that it's important that there is people involved in the process who have kind of a multitude of viewpoints and experiences, so that there aren't sort of things slipping by just because there is nobody in the room who knew better or had that experience to be able to say this doesn't really ring true or this is a problem. So I think that there does have to be a deliberate plan in place to help move these things forward, and I think that we're seeing some of that change,
I'm super excited about that change, and I'm also thankful for you guys creating this and doing this annually. Thank you so much for joining our conversation, Megan Townsend, the Director of Entertainment Research and Analysis. I got it that time, honey. Thank you for joining our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, we have a lot more show coming up. We got What's Trending Top of the Hour News. And honey, guess what? We're talking to some famous people a little bit later in the show. So stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, honey, so we are back carrying on with the show.
We're back on the radio, apparently.
Look at that. Jared Hill from Drop the Subject with Jared Alley is joining me, filling in for Shira Lazar. And I really appreciate you, you know, spending time with me. Outside of this.
This is, you know what? That's because you say stuff like that and it hurts my feelings. I feel like Let's Go There is kind of like my gateway drug into Channel Q.
And it is. So let's get into what's trending top of the hour. Every single hour, you can expect headlines, guys. So anyone who watched Donald Trump's bizarre Rose Garden, oh, that is loud, and I'm bopping to it in my head, but I can't hear it. So anyone who watched Donald Trump's bizarre Rose Garden news conference, you know, the one he threw a big temper tantrum of about the infrastructure, well, on Wednesday, might be surprised to learn that he had prepared notes. A sneaky photographer from the Washington Post, Jabin Botsford, caught handwritten bullet points in black Sharpie ink listing the topics that the president wanted to cover. The notes appeared to complain that Democrats want to impeach me over acts that they did and say Dems have no accomplishments. And he spelled it wrong. He spelled it A-C-H-O-M-L-I-S-H. Trump announced a news conference to say he will no longer work with Democrats while they pursue the investigation track. I mean, honestly, none of this is surprising.
Yeah, just the idea, like, I can't work with you until you stop investigating me is like, wow. I'll take criminals for 500, please.
Thank you. It's like wild. So also in what's trending top of the hour, a Catholic priest in Hackensack, New Jersey, ordered a charter school that leases the school grounds from his church to cover up a pride mural in the school cafeteria, calling it obscene because it included an homage to Keith Haring's interlocking male symbols. Now, while Bergen X and Science Charter School is a public school in New Jersey, which became the second in the nation to mandate that LGBTQ history should be a part of the curriculum, the lease agreement with the church requires that the school adhere to Catholic ideals. So there is a huge loophole, which sucks. Now, the mural was a part of an art class projected in which students were asked to paint murals in the school cafeteria that were inspired by famous artists. The student, who was queer, has said that she did not paint the mural as a political act, but she wanted to pay homage to Haring, the 80s-era pop artist and activist who died of AIDS.
Oh, man, we're completely out of time, because I could have gone in on how the Catholic Church...
I know, and you know what? I'm just going to let them have their moment. We might have to circle back later in the show. But guess what? I'm very, very excited, because we are being joined by Grammy-nominated electronic artist and DJ and producer Audien, and the lead singer of that alt-pop sibling trio, Echo Smith, Sydney Soretto. And they're joining us to chat about their new song, Favorite Sound. So, honey, stick around. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
So I am here with Grammy-nominated music DJ and producer Audien.
Hey.
And the lead singer of multi-platinum pop sibling trio, Echo Smith, Sydney.
Hey.
Guys, I am so excited that you're here and just, one, gracing me with your presence.
Thank you.
Ditto.
I think it's one of those things, because you guys are obviously here to chat about your new single, Favorite Sound, which is, I feel like, a summer classic.
Thank you.
And I think it's so important, but when I was listening to this song, I originally kind of thought it was like about a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, this is good, like, to kind of figure that out. But then I realized when I was like starting to read the lyrics, I was like, this is kind of really about mental health in some way, and kind of having awareness of that. Is that what really kind of what you guys both were thinking about in this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important now more than ever to really address mental health. And no matter what you deal with, somebody, you know, is bound to go through the same thing. So I think it's really important with songwriting to be honest about what you're going through, and whether you've been diagnosed with something or not, everybody deals with it.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very vulnerable song, which is why I love it. And I think it's just important to talk about all the crazy noise in your head that can be very overwhelming to me. And it's really comforting to know that the fans are responding to it and saying, oh my gosh, I feel this way, and this is exactly what I go through. Because that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
And makes me remember that I'm not alone, and that I can kind of rely on the community to sort of lift each other up.
And it takes away the stigma, right? Because I think, like you said, it is a very vulnerable thing to talk about mental health and just talk about, like, I feel like crap today. Because with Instagram and social media, it's one of those things where you have to put up what looks good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's super important with that. I guess, why is this song, especially coming up with Pride Month, I feel like this is also a great song to really realizing living your truth in some way. I guess with obviously, you have LGBTQ like Q fans and things like that. Did you guys kind of think about the aspect of that and kind of how it can touch those fans as well?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I write a song, I am thinking about anyone and everyone who could be listening to it, because you never know who's hearing your song, whether it was from an ad on Instagram or they heard it in a grocery store, whatever it is, you're reaching so many people and so many different types of people. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm like, oh my gosh, how can everybody relate to this song?
Yeah.
And that's definitely something that I think about with songwriting. I think about literally everyone, and there are so many different kinds of people in the entire world. So it's, I mean, you can reach so many people, but with the same sort of message and feeling of a song, no matter who you are or where you're from.
Yeah. What about you, audience? Because, I mean, obviously that there's a process when it comes to DJing and producing a track like this.
Yeah.
What goes in your, in like goes on in your brain when you're creating this?
I mean, I really like, first of all, I have to love the song and I have to love the lyrics, which I did definitely with this one. But I'm the same process every time, whether the lyrics are about this or that, really. It's like I'm always going to produce something really melodic and really, you know, something you can connect with on a more like under the surface level than just like lyrics and stuff. So,
which I love. And, you know, let's be real here because I'm there. I'm very real. And
it.
Our show's called Let's Go There. So EDM is like such a foreign industry to me. It's like, I mean, I love a good R&B bop.
Yeah.
I love a good EDM track too. But I think what's really interesting is how it's like elevated in mainstream, like to really mainstream heights, you know? Does that make you feel like you can take it to another level that it hasn't been before?
Yeah. I mean, I single-handedly like watched dance music go from just being in the clubs and like being like underground to like just on the radio and everything. Mm-hmm. And I even was able to be a part of that with my last record with Lady Antebellum. One of my
first of all, quick note, I went to college with them.
No way.
What? Insane. Like I was like, wait, y'all are Lady Antebellum. Like it was like a whole thing.
That's
but they
amazing.
Weren't that then. But
that's amazing.
You know. Love a good country bop.
Yeah, they're Nashville people, right?
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah, I mean like house music has been a big staple of that community for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, it's like it's like the early days of house music. It was really, you know, LBGT, like, you know, it was like they were
the
champions of it.
Oh, honey, the house down. Yes, you're so right. It's one of those things where it's like, I think that's why I'm starting to really connect with it, because there is a culture, there's a history there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I think a lot of times people of this community felt like that was the way that they really can express themselves, by just listening to beats, listening to sounds, whether it be like, you know, knocks and clacks and all these things, but it felt good.
Yeah, it was just good energy, and it's like great for clubs and stuff, and like, you know, the fact that that's now on the radio, like that's just awesome. That just shows that you could really do anything with music, really.
So, okay, how was EDC, y'all? Literally looked
awesome.
Amazing. The video, I was like stalking his Instagram. I was like, yes, this is great.
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. So yeah, Nate was nice for letting me come up and sing our song together, which was actually the first time we had performed it.
Oh wow.
In front of people.
Were you nervous?
I actually was. I used to never really get nervous unless it was something, I don't know, like something went wrong or something like that. But I don't know. I was so nervous all week. And I just kept thinking, oh my gosh, what if I forget the words? I'm going to forget the words. And I kept like, literally, it's what the song is about. And I'm practicing the song like in the shower, getting frustrated, like so stressing myself out, feeling sick. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what is the message of this song?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm literally being so hypocritical, you know, so I kind of had to remind myself.
It shows you're human. It shows that I even though you're singing this song, you still have those moments where you have to go through that, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
It's a part of the growth. What about you? How was that experience? I mean, hundreds, thousands of fans just jamming out to you. I saw one tweet where someone was like, I think I just cried during your set.
Yeah, no, EDC was amazing. Like, this is my fourth one, and this is like my favorite set because I had like a really good slot, good time. Like,
you're famous.
Great stage.
Yes.
And he killed it.
But I worked to get to this point. I worked hard to get it.
Yeah, it's good.
But, like, you know, it was, like, it was so fun. It was really, it's my favorite one to date.
Yeah.
They just keep getting better. Like, this year it was better than the other ones.
Which is interesting. Do you think, because you are reaching such, and you're working so hard to get to where you are, do you kind of hate that there is now a fame level to it? It's like, oh, I just wish I was just in my room making these moments, like, the innocence behind it.
I don't really think about it. I bet you don't even either, right? It's just, like, it's just a byproduct, but we just think about, like, getting songs done in a really, you know, the best we can, and like putting out just good music, and the rest of the stuff's just extra, you know?
Okay, so I have a very important question for you, audience.
Sure.
I always wonder this. How do DJs come up with their names?
I don't know, because I mean, I came up with mine like walking home from school in middle school.
Okay.
Like the end of middle school.
So take me there. What year was it? We're going there. How did, you were like, audience, this is the moment.
I guess high school, because I was 15.
Okay.
And I was just like, I don't want to use my actual, I just started producing, and I was like, I want to be a DJ, and I'm like, I don't want to use my actual name, because like my full name is like a real like tongue twister. And it's just like, I was like, I need a name that's cool, and that just came to me.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I had a cool story for it, but that was it.
I mean, that could be a cool
story. You're just naturally creative. Jeez.
Thanks.
But, well, it, you know, some people have these amazing stories where they're like, yeah, you know, I just I met a guy on the road, and he came up to me and looked at me and said this word, and that was my name. It's just like, I don't have anything cool like that.
I mean, here's the thing. I think one thing about this song, and people, you guys, you interact with fans all the time. How does it feel when they tell you that there's, like, your music changes their lives, like, really impacts them?
I mean, it's the best feeling in the world because, obviously, originally, I started doing music because I just loved it, and I just thought it was a really fun thing to do. But I also did it because I really wanted to have an impact on people. So that was my dream from the very start. Even at 9 years old when we started the band, I was like, I want to help people. And I want them to know that they're loved and that they are great as is, you know? So this sort of reaction always means so much to me. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes even at meet and greets, it'll kind of get you a little choked up because you realize, oh my gosh, my dream is coming true. I'm able to help, even if it's just that one person who's like, oh my gosh, my life was changed, or you helped me accept myself or be who I am, who I am today because of that song or whatever it is. If I can just help one person, that's amazing to me, but it's great to hear, obviously, multiple testimonies.
I love that. I think it's also, one, Audien, you've worked with so many people. I mean, like you said, Lady Antebellum. I mean, Max, we love him here. He's been on
Max
the show.
Max is amazing.
He's a friend of the show, guys.
He's a friend of every human.
He's a friend of life. He's a friend of life. But here's the thing. What, I guess, who would be your dream collaboration?
Another DJ or an artist?
I mean, go big or go home.
Let's go there.
Yes, let's go. Thank you.
I mean, I had this.
Can we cut that soundbite for all promos of my life just saying, let's go there?
Let's go there.
I don't know. I think I want to do a song with, like, Calvin Harris. Would be really cool.
Dope.
You know, because he's like, he makes, like, kind of crossovery stuff like I do, just in, you know, a much more advanced, probably better way.
What is it when it comes to that crossover appeal that really drives you, like, I don't know, interests you?
It's just a challenge because, like, you have to, like, service two different audiences. And, like, that to me, I like a challenge like that. So it's like, I don't know. I just, that to me is fun, in my opinion.
Okay, so Sydney, let me tell you, I feel like 2013 was the year of, you know, Cool Kids and Talking Dreams.
Yeah.
And that was one. I am such a huge fan of Echo Smith.
Thank you.
I love you guys. I mean, y'all were like, I feel like my second to Paramore in some ways. Like, I just resonate with you all. And I'm like, when can we be expecting more music? I know this is a great single and a great lead way.
Yeah, no, this is definitely the beginning of a lot more to come. We've been in the studio literally every day, at least Monday through Friday, because we've been having shows on the weekends. So every weekday we're in the studio, and we have so much material. So now it's just a matter of doing the finishing touches and deciding when it comes out and all that. But there is an album coming. It should be coming not too far from now, but definitely, I mean, obviously within the year.
I mean, of course.
Yes. So yeah, we're hoping for fall. I don't know if I'm even supposed to say that, but
girl, you can say it. Channel Q exclusive. Won't
exclusive. But yeah, and then we have some songs coming out obviously before that.
Yeah.
And yeah, another fun feature coming very, very soon in like a week or two. So
I love that. And Audien, of course, you're living, like, I mean, amazing with this single, like, Favorite Sound. What's coming up in the era and evolution of your music?
Definitely doing an album this year as well. It'll be my first, but I've, like, released so many songs over the past, like, 8 years just as singles and EPs. But this will be my first album, like, all in one time
period. Are you nervous about that? Because you seem like a very chill.
I've had enough time.
I need your energy in my life.
I've had enough time to plan it, so it's like,
this is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's one of those things, especially because this is y'all's art. This is what you love, your passions.
Yeah.
But when you put it out in front of everyone, you have to expect, you know, opinions. Is that, does that ever?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I don't know. It's just like I've been having more and more of that recently. Like, a couple people made a post on Reddit about a DJ set, and then it was like a whole bunch of people jumped in and started talking about it. And it's like, there's just like a lot of like, what's the word? There's just like a lot of critiques on the internet these days, and I don't let it bother me. I just do whatever I feel is right at this point. you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like I'm like in the presence of someone like a Gandhi or something.
You know.
You're like
close
changing
enough.
My life
That's
right
quite
now.
A compliment.
Close enough.
That's fair.
No,
nice.
It's just the energy. I think I it's good to know that you're surrounding yourself with just awesome, like, you know, you just very confident in
just
what you're
control
putting
it, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy to get to you. Like, a lot of people let it get to them, but I don't know. You don't have to do that. You can just kind of let it go.
Okay, so I'm good at this, but I want you guys to intro your own song because we love to play it here, but we want to add a little spice to it, you know?
Okay.
So intro favorite sound.
All right. Well, I'm Sydney from Echo Smith.
And I'm Audien.
And our song favorite sound is playing right now.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
Oh my God. I had such an amazing time talking to Echo Smith and Audien today. It was just absolutely amazing. But now it's time to get into our Let's Go There, where we really tackle, you know, topics and just have conversations very raw, like, because they're needed and it might make you uncomfortable, but deal with it. And, you know, ahead of Pride season, more and more businesses are wanting to, you know, show support. And I think a lot of times some businesses are often called out for queer baiting. And I'm super excited to kind of talk about this ahead of Pride season, you know, and I think it's very important. And joining us is Gino Sesto. He's the founder of Dash 2, an advertising agency. So hi, Gino. Thanks for joining.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for inviting me.
No, of course. So, Gina, I know you've worked with big brands, and especially with Pride Month coming around. How, I guess, with everyone especially talking about diversity, I guess, where's the balance of wanting to genuinely be involved and show support, but then also kind of using, you know, Pride as a product?
That's a great question. Well, I think that a lot of brands that we've worked with in the past, like H&M and American Apparel, they're very friendly to gay pride, and so they're just showing that support. I don't think that these brands are doing these kinds of outdoor campaigns that we've done for them just to try to sell. I think it's just really a genuine, good-natured, we support you kind of effort that these guys put together.
Yeah, do you think it's real, actually, like, their support is kind of having real impact instead of just branding?
I mean, obviously, they're not running ads just for the sake of it. They obviously want to be a part of the community and be accepted in the community, because obviously the community has a lot of money, and why not tap into it and be friendly to it? I don't think that there's really an ulterior motive. Obviously, they're selling a product.
Right.
You know, they're not just running pro ads just for fun. They obviously want to brand themselves.
Right, yeah.
So I always feel like there's a double-edged sword with this kind of a thing. Like, I feel like part of me feels like the idea of it being queer baiting is a little bit unfair, and then part of me is like it's completely fair. So I feel like when we're looking at, and it's almost kind of like the way we look at appropriation versus appreciation, right?
Yeah.
And I think that with something like this, we want companies and countries and governments and everyone to like be open and inclusive and supportive. And at the same time, like when they do it, then we're like, well, why are you doing it though? You only doing it because we was mad. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword for everyone to figure out how to do it well.
You're basically saying you're never happy.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. I mean, realistically, like, Twitter's never happy, right? Like,
I mean, yeah,
Twitter's
right?
never going to be pleased.
It's the age of canceling, to be honest. That's,
yeah.
where, that's the age and culture that we're in, digitally-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, but let's be honest. I mean, this is a pretty new phenomenon. This hasn't been going on for the gay community that long. I mean, brands have been very shy, in, you know, 10 years ago. But now it's more accepted. So, you know, why not? Don't be mad.
No, I'm completely there with you.
I mean, like, you just sold me, Gino. Thank you.
I won't
be mad anymore.
I'm completely there with you. And I've said before, and I'll be doing this with Channel Q. So I'll be in New York for Pride, for World Pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of what I'm doing while I'm there is hosting the Stonewall Vision Awards. And this is like, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Stonewall and the Stonewall Community Foundation. They have all of these brands that have really rolled out the red carpet for them. Urban Decay is doing a lot of a big branding thing with them. Levi's is doing a big thing with them, and they're giving a lot of money that comes from all of those sales that go into the foundations. And so I feel like that's kind of a way that I always ask myself, okay, well, if you are supporting the cause, like, where's the money going? You know, and what are the other ways that we can look at brands and see if they're taking this seriously?
Was that a question?
Yes.
First of all, I represent an advertising agency that works with big brands. So
he's like, I'm not about to.
Tell you what's in their minds.
But to that point though, like you work with these companies, so like when you're looking at companies and you want to see like if they take this seriously or if this is something that really is of value
care.
To them.
You're spending money.
But here's the thing. And I think that's very interesting because I think a lot of times where I want to play devil's advocate here is, you know, you have these brands like, I mean, I don't want to be rude and you know, we've done like our Coachella house and things like that, but that brand is known to where their founders and things like that are known to donate to anti-LGBTQ, you know, people and organizations. And so I think it's interesting if your brand hasn't been aligned and the company hasn't been aligned, you know, pro this or pro that, it's interesting to see them kind of just hop in where there's not them not being genuine just feels like, oh, they see this, it works. They're going to put on
I mean, come on. You guys can see that. You can see through all the bullshit. If somebody, I don't know if I can say that.
I don't think you can say that either, but we dropping it.
I mean, if a brand is not genuine, I mean, everyone's all about genuine nature and all that stuff and being real and true and all that good stuff. People can see through the malarkey.
Just to wrap this up, do you think there is a way to kind of make not everyone happy, but to kind of come in on a compromise and being like, we do want to be a part and we hope that you see us being genuine?
Well, I mean, I think donations is the best way to go. Donating to causes and things of that nature. You don't have to just be having a logo with that cause. You can actually donate to it blindly.
Yeah.
I mean, not everything has to be. I mean, that's the problem with today's society, right? You do something good, the first thing you do is you tell everybody about what you did, right? That to me is disingenuous.
How
about you just do good?
Yeah.
And then let them find out about it.
Well, Gino, I haven't thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Gino Sesto, he is the founder of Dash 2, an advertising agency. You can check that out at dash2.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And coming after this break, we are going to continue this conversation because I feel like, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about Jared's perspective on that double-edged sword. So you're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so we are back and continuing our Let's Go There right now. And joining me and filling in for Shira Lazar is Jared Hill from Drop the Subject with Jared and Allie.
Hey, that's me.
So I've appreciated this conversation because, you know, Pride season is happening. It's, you know, coming up very quickly. And we've been having this discussion about, like, you know, companies, major businesses, like, kind of queer baiting. And if it's okay, and what's that line and balance of, you know, knowing that they're genuine and knowing that they're just not using us as a product? Because from what I've seen and how I feel, especially with words like diversity and being inclusive, I'm kind of really tired of hearing it.
Yeah.
Because it just now feels like it's another way of saying you are a diversity hire.
I mean, so there's a, again, it cuts both ways, right? So if we're looking at, I was saying I'm working on a story and where we're talking about diversity and inclusion at the different television networks, and there's a question of, like, I ask everyone, like, how do you measure your diversity and inclusion success? Like, if you've set a goal, like, how do you measure that? And every single person in diversity and inclusion in any company will tell you, like, oh, well, we're not counting numbers and we're not looking at data. We just want it to be organic and da-da-da. And, like, and realistically, that's a BS answer, right? Like, if you don't have any metrics to measure, then how can you say you have a plan? If you don't have a way that you can measure whether or not you're doing something, you would never do that with money.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. So here's an example. Back in 2018, Adidas, which had like a special, I actually remember this, they had a special section of its site called the Pride Pack, and they were selling rainbow merchandise to honor Pride Month. But it's also, you know, one of the major sponsors for the 2018 World Cup, which takes place in Russia, a country with anti-LGBTQ plus laws, and it really that makes it unsafe for fans and athletes. And so I think a lot of people even called that being like, oh, that's very hypocritical that you're supporting this and you're supporting that, because I think brands have to realize that, yes, you're going to want to do what's smart for your brand. I get it. It's all about keeping the success and tapping into a group that will allow you to make more money. But I also think you have to realize your actions. People are going to dive in and say, all right, so if you're doing this, what are you doing on the other end? And if something pops up where they're, you know, obviously like Adidas, where they're taking part in being major sponsors of a World Cup where it took place in Russia, it's a little sketchy.
Yeah, I think the part that we have to always remember with stuff like that is, like, it's a business, right? So, like, if we're talking about, you know, Wrangler, or if we're talking about Levi's or American Express or whatever company it is, we have to realistically figure out, like, what we are expecting of them.
Yeah.
Like, this is a company that whose sole purpose is to make money.
Which, of course, but I think it's also okay for companies to speak up and release statements.
Yeah, but it's important for them to be open and honest, and, like, if they want to support a cause, like, give money to that cause, do what you can to help it. But, like, when they're selling jeans with a rainbow flag on it, or if they're selling, you know, water bottles with a rainbow top or whatever it is, like, they also have to make money because they're a business. And so if it's not going to make them money, then they probably aren't going to do it. And ultimately, like, they can also look at it from a broader perspective of, like, does this help our brand, right? Does this help us to be in places that we might not be able to be, even if it doesn't make us money? Like, does it give us an image that we want to
Right, because I think that support. Is very important. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think when you're talking about hiring, you know, people, and where, like, I feel like we always see those stories every, you know, every 3 months or every month, it seems like, where fashion brands are, like, you know, they're doing something very inappropriate when it comes to their clothing during fashion shows, or they're, you know, having an appropriation moment. But it shows that clearly there's no diversity even in your corporation, and that's why you're having moments like this. I think it's interesting to have the idea of, like, okay, I understand that our company and our brand, we care about that. And we actually have even, you know, subgroups inside of the company that are willing to work on, oh, we have some, you know, groups that are wanting to talk about LGBTQ+ issues and make sure that we have a voice in that. And they're kind of spearheading these things where it does seem like it's coming from a genuine voice.
Yeah, I think when we look at stuff like that, I think we have to figure out what we want to see and approach them and say,
true.
Like, what we want you to be more inclusive. Like, realistically, if we're talking about Chick-fil-A, for instance.
Oh, God.
Right, they're obviously, like, really, really awful when it comes to LGBTQ issues. But, like,
fries.
If we wanted them to say that they were going to stop giving money to anti-LGBTQ initiatives, and we want them to stop supporting, you know, initiatives that we see as dangerous and harmful, and they stop doing that, then the response can't be, oh, well, you're only doing that because we were yelling at you. Yeah, that's why we're doing that. You guys said that was bad, so we stopped doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
it's
we have
true,
to figure out
true.
What we want and, like, give, like, measurable goals of, like, be able to what we can have benchmarks that we can reach.
You're so right. I
thank you.
I partially agree with that. But we have way more to get into. The show ain't over yet, honey. Now it is top of the hour news coming up, and then we're also going to tell you about a way you can win your way into New York City to celebrate Pride. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
So do you want to win a trip to New York City to celebrate Pride Weekend, June 27th through the 30th? Well, guess what? So Channel Q is partnering with our good friends Schafferhofer Grapefruit and Pomegranate, where we're going to send you and a friend to one of the biggest Pride parties in the world, honey. We're going to provide you with round-trip airfare and a four-night hotel stay in New York City. I mean, honestly, the luxury. It sounds very famous, like, all I'm saying. And so if you want to have your chance, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com for your chance to win. And, of course, keep listening to the new Channel Q for all of the details, because you're not going to want to miss this. Honestly, Pride is huge. Pride Month is going to be lavish. New York City Pride is everything. And Schafferhofer Grapefruit and Pomegranate are celebrating Pride with us, and we really want you guys to unleash your Pride. Now, let's get into our What's Trending Top of the Hour news. So, okay. Super funny story. I cackled. Not going to lie to you. White House counselor Kellyanne Conway on Thursday accused Speaker Nancy Pelosi of treating her like a maid after the two had a very tense exchange after an ill-fated infrastructure meeting with President Trump. The counselor to President Trump gave her side of the story on Fox News America's newsroom after it emerged that Pelosi brushed her off a day earlier by saying she wouldn't talk to her staff.
I said, respectfully, Madam Speaker, would you like to address some of the specifics the president talked about? And she said, I talk to the president, I don't talk to staff. Because let's face it, she's the sixth most rich member of Congress. She treats everybody like they're her staff. She treats me like I'm either her maid or her driver or her pilot or her makeup artist, and I'm not. And I said to her, how very pro-woman of you, per usual, because she's not very pro-woman, she's pro-some woman.
I love hearing this from Kellyanne Conway, whose boss is Donald Trump. It's
so embarrassing. Honestly, I would have never admitted to like her saying that Nancy Pelosi
read you for dirt.
That is the most embarrassing. And I felt like the read just went over Kellyanne Conway's head. Like it just, she didn't get it.
It was a pretty nasty read.
It's hilarious. Yeah. So the exchange between Conway and Pelosi underscored the tensions between Trump and congressional Democrats over the possibility that lawmakers will begin impeachment proceedings against the president. Now, but as for infrastructure, last month, Schumer and Pelosi said Trump had agreed to support a $2 trillion infrastructure spending package. $1 trillion.
That's a lot.
I will never in a lifetime. But at the time, they said no decisions were made on how to pay for the plan. The president, a real estate developer before he was elected president, has long sought to strike a big infrastructure deal, but has faced some resistance from conservatives in his party over concerns about the country's rising debt.
Yeah, so Donald Trump has been running our debt and deficit just like through the roof. And
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because like as a private citizen, he would criticize Barack Obama for a debt and deficit. And Republicans are always supposed to be the party of fiscal conservatism and fiscal responsibility. But like we are just running up all kinds of debts. The other thing that's important though to remember, we're talking about debt. Is the way, and when we're talking about all of these things, like the way they continue to cut taxes, is always indicative of like where you can always see like how much they reduce our revenue, and then they're going to later on say like, oh, we can't afford to do this and that and the other. So, but they can always find the money for the wall or whatever.
Exactly, they will find the money for what they needed. I don't know. Well, moving on, a new poll shows support for LGBTQ rights in Russia has reached a 14-year high. The Levada Center on Thursday released new poll results to the Moscow Times showing homophobic attitudes are on the decline. Their survey showed 47% of Russians agree with the statement gays and lesbians should enjoy the same rights as other citizens, and about 43% of respondents disagreed with the statement. This is the highest level of support for LGBTQ rights in over 14 years. But commentators say that this change could be because the Russian government has ramped down much of their homophobic rhetoric that flooded state-run media when gay propaganda laws were passed in 2013. Anti-gay sentiment in Russia reached a high in the poll in 2013 when 47% of respondents disagreed with equal rights and just 39% expressed support. So that's very interesting. There's a turn of events happening in Russia, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, I guess for the most part,
opinion is changing, yes, but right. I don't know what we would expect from like a governmental perspective or how things might change because, you know, I mean, it's still pretty homophobic.
Well, moving on, there is a breaking news kind of story. So an Illinois judge on Thursday ordered Empire actor Jussie Smollett's criminal case file unsealed, which I thought we were over this story. I thought we moved past it. I thought
a new Jussie Smollett headline every week.
It's terrible. So
I just don't get how we're still like every week there's another update to this story.
I don't get it either. It's kind of annoying at this point. So setting up the release of a wealth of information surrounding the controversial and often confusing case, Cook County Judge Stephen G. Watkins' decision came months after this, super unnecessary set set of events. First, Smollett alleged that he had been a victim of a hate crime. After an extensive investigation, Chicago cops arrested Smollett and accused him of faking the supposed attack. And then Cook County prosecutors subtly dropped the charges against Smollett, and his case was sealed. When the state attorney asked whether the office could have more time to redact personal information for the files, Watkins advised prosecutors to act as if the documents were never sealed in the first place.
I think that's going to be... I remember how damaging it was to him when, you know, the Cook County prosecutor came out and did that long oration of, like, of their account of what happened.
Yeah, convicting him.
Which I think was really problematic in a lot of ways.
For sure.
When you're in the city where you would seemingly have a jury, that's just, like, wild that they did that way.
Yeah.
But now it's like, I can't believe, like, we're still talking about more things, but now these court files being unsealed means we're going to see all of the different things that they were prepared to bring against him in court,
which doesn't help him
at all.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm a little, God, I'm not nervous about it, but I'm also interested to see what's in these files. So that is what's trending, top of the hour news. Every single hour you can expect headlines that you may have missed. But moving on with the show, it's time for our question of the day, which is such a good one. It's kind of one of my favorites. Have you ever had a friend or family member overstay their welcome, and how did you handle it? Give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557, and hit us up on social media at We Are Channel Q, because the responses are crazy. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Call Channel Q right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We are the new Channel Q.
So it is time for our question of the day. As like that beautiful lady said, she gave y'all the number. Y'all better start calling in. So basically our question of the day is all about, have you ever had a friend or family member overstay their welcome, and how did you handle it? So this is inspired by Kendall Jenner, who admits Kourtney Kardashian is overstaying her welcome weeks after, you know, the whole Woosley fire that happened last year. And so basically on the episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the evacuation mandate had been lifted, but Kourtney Kardashian still wants to stay put at Kendall's house. So it's so interesting because we saw this, and we actually have a clip of that moment, and then we'll dive in.
I'm a little annoyed about something. Kourt's been staying at my house ever since the fires, which I'm always happy to help, and like I love having company, and I love my sister. But it's just like, she's overstaying her welcome a bit.
Oh boy.
It was fun for the first like week, and now I'm just like, oh my goodness, this is...
exhausted.
Yeah. You guys are all back in, it's safe, and I just feel like she's obsessed with my house and doesn't want to leave.
Yeah, that's not good.
There's a lot of kids.
That's a lot.
So what's funny to me about this is that I think, if I remember correctly, because I've watched all of it, I think Kendall stayed with Kourtney. I mean, she's talking about Kourtney, right?
Yeah, so she's saying Kourtney is staying at Kendall's house because of the fire. But this has happened before.
I think Kendall stayed with Chloe before she moved into her new house.
Yes. And I'm not going to lie. They've been showing pieces of Kendall's house, and it's actually really nice. So I get it why you would want to stay. But here's the thing. I've had this happen to me where I've had friends come over my house, and me and my best friend live together. And we are the types of people where we are extroverts. And we love to just hang out with each other, but we don't really like to have people, if they do come over, stay over for a very long time.
Yeah.
And we had a friend that had just recently moved to LA. We're like, stop by. Like, let's hang out for a little bit. Let's catch up. And so after we had caught up and she had stayed for about 3 or 4 hours, we were like, okay, well, is she going to leave? Because it is dark at this point. It is late. And so we did this. I did this because I'm petty. I was like, you know, DeMarcus, I think I have an early day, so I'm going to go to bed. And I said goodbye to her. But DeMarcus, that ended up leaving DeMarcus, left with, oh, okay, I have to say if she's going to leave or not. But then we were like, okay, well, are you going to catch Uber, blah blah blah. She's like, no, I don't want to catch. Like, do you mind if I just sleep on the couch or something? Because I don't want to. I don't want to catch an Uber at night. I was like,
girl, what?
You are in LA. You just moved here. You better get acclimated to the culture. Get your butt in behind.
So wait,
into
what did
Uber.
You say?
I think DeMarcus was just like, no, I don't. You know, it's okay. It'll be fine. Just catch an Uber, and he showed her like the way out.
Yeah, That's really difficult when someone's been in your house too long, whether it's like they're there for the evening and staying too long, or if they're like staying with you for a few days and they want to stay longer.
That's why I don't invite nobody over. I would love to have like dinner parties and stuff like that and be like, oh my God, please, I would love to host. Yeah. But I just think some people don't get cues. And we actually have a caller on the line. Okay, so Mary Catherine is on the line. And girl, I heard your husband is in the military and you're having trouble with your in-law staying with you.
After I hadn't seen my husband for 9 months, you know.
Yeah, I would have had to kick them out and be like, honey, we got a lot of work to do, you know, personal growth in our relationship.
I really wanted to say that to them, but my husband's like, you know, they haven't seen me either. I'm like, but we can go see them this weekend, you know, you get to spend time with me and your newborn child.
Exactly. You know what? Sometimes people just don't get hints, and it's just like, well, what am I going to say? I want to have sex right now?
Yeah, like it's awkward when you want someone to leave and you don't know how. I had a friend that came over and like she flew into town just for like one day last night.
Yeah.
And she came and I was like, I hope that she doesn't end up like trying to stay longer, because like I really love the peace and the quiet of my house. And like, how do you say to someone like, so when are you leaving? Like, it's just awkward.
Oh, honey, yeah. I say, when are you going? You're going to catch an Uber outside?
Right, and it's not even personal because I love her, but it's like, I want my house to be empty.
So, okay, thank you, Mary Catherine, which, I love your name because it reminds me of Sister Act, and I just want to call you Sister Mary Clarence, which I do, and I love it, and I always like it when you guys call. So give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. If you want to answer our question of the day, have you ever had a friend or family member overstay their welcome, and how did you handle it? And when we get back, I am actually going to give you some tips on how you can really push the message forward, honey, because we gotta get these people up out of here. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
We are in the middle of discussing our question of the day, which is, have you ever had a friend or family member overstay their welcome? And honey, how did you handle it? So I want to go over to We Are Channel Q on our social meds, because we have gotten a lot of answers. People are triggered. So
it sounds like they're the people who were staying too long to them.
Okay, so Kimberly.
People are triggered.
Kimberly says yes, a friend. So she says yes, dot, a friend, dot. She started wanting to redecorate after 6 months.
Oh, the devil is
a
lie.
I said the words, that's it, time for you to move out.
Oh my God. You want to redecorate?
That is wild to me.
How can I make this obvious?
But here's the thing. I would, I see what you did there.
Thank you. But I knew Vanessa caught it. I wasn't sure if you did.
If I was, you know, staying at a friend's house or something, and if their place is just ugly, I get why they would be like, I just need to change my environment, like some fun sweat.
So you should move out. Like, that's not hard.
Oh my God. Okay. James said, yes, my best friend growing up and one of my best friends both were staying with me. One lost their job, one was getting divorced, and I was almost supporting them. Honey, you need new best friends. With no help on bills or nothing, I called a meeting and told them that they go or I go. I ended up moving on my own.
Oop.
You moved out of your
Wow. That's heavy.
I hope it was an apartment, so it wasn't like a mortgage involved and you got foreclosed.
I mean, if they're paying your rent, I mean.
But it says no money. They weren't helping him with any of the bills or anything.
Oh, see, that's where the devil's a liar.
Come through. Okay, so Ashley said, my mother-in-law is living with us. What was supposed to be 2 months is turned into four. It's really put a strain on my relationship with her and her and my husband. There's way more to the story, but if anyone has advice on how to handle this, I appreciate it. Okay, thank you for telling me you want advice. So,
ooh, let's do it.
This is fun.
Can we get some music, Vanessa?
This is fun.
Let's get some advice music.
Yeah, let's get some advice music. Let's set up the scenery. So yeah. Ashley, our good friend Ashley, is really struggling. You know, it seems like mother-in-laws are the worst. Mm. And it's...
SOS.
Oh, SOS.
SOS. That's good.
That's good.
Vanessa would be like a producer up in here.
Yeah, it's like she does this as her job or something. And so, you know, I'm going to read it one more time so we can all get into it. So my mother-in-law is living with us. What was supposed to be 2 months is turning into four. It's really put a strain on my relationship with her and my husband.
So the thing is, your husband has to deal with this, Ashley. It's Ashley.
Yes,
right?
Your husband
has to get rid of his mom, and you have to encourage him to do it.
Oh, see, because saw this too differently.
Because you, as the wife, cannot go to the mother-in-law and like boot her out of the house without it becoming a real issue.
Well, girl, Ashley, then don't take my advice, because I was like, I was going to tell you to go ahead and start packing up his mother's stuff and just make sure it's waiting either if you have a garage or on the porch and then change the locks.
Ashley didn't say anything about why she was staying there, though. So it's like, is it a health issue? Is it her house is being remodeled? Is she's homeless?
I'm honestly not a fan. When I think about, because I'm single, you know, right now, I think about like the idea of like in-laws.
Yeah.
And I always am like, I would never, like ever allow my in-laws to stay with me and my partner. I think maybe if there was a big enough house and like I knew they could have their own like wing.
Yeah.
Then yes, maybe.
I've always been like wildly opposed to the idea of even my parents living with me.
Same.
And I always told them, I was like, you guys better hope that I really make it rich, that I can have like two guest houses if you ever need to come stay with me.
Right.
But the idea that you're going to be staying in the man's with me,
it's just not okay.
The Lord has not spoken to my spirit about that.
And I understand, you know, parents may be sick and you want to be there and watch for them and things like that. And I get that. But also, there's assisted living.
Listen, there really is. Like,
and that might be harsh, but I mean,
living with my parents just feels absolutely dreadful. We were talking about what people do after college and like moving back home. When Vanessa was like, I wish I would have moved home for a year, you know, because it helps you to get on your feet and figure out what you want
to
do.
Yeah, who wants to pay rent anyway? Of course, I would do it.
But the idea of it just, it makes me cringe when I think about like living with my parents.
Well, I hope we help you, Ashley. Probably
we totally
did.
I'm sure we fixed all your problems.
So Marquez said this, or Marquise, hopefully, whatever, his name is Andre3Facts, says, I cleaned out the refrigerator, I stopped grocery shopping, and started removing toiletries from the guest bathroom. But I'm petty. So that's what he did to get this other person
out. How passive-aggressive.
It's very passive-aggressive. Okay, one more. Dean said, I possibly overstayed a few times. You start to realize it when the host asks you to do the washing up, ironing, vacuum cleaning, walking the dog, cuts the grass, put the washing out, and so on.
So, Dean, right. I knew that you were on some bull when you said, I might have a few times. You know that you did, Dean.
Dean's whole life he's been overstaying.
Right, exactly. He's overstaying his welcome somewhere right now.
Oh my God. Well, okay, let's get into the full on facts, because you know, Ashley, I still want to give you some advice, and we have some ways where you help kind of get rid of people that you don't need. So for those you know that will linger, put a limit on the conversation time from the start. So when you make plans with a serial overstayer, mention that you have other things going on in the day.
Yeah.
So I've actually done this once where someone has asked to like stay with me. I've actually lied and said like someone was already sleeping on my couch, but it was probably me or Coco.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to put in the air that no, you cannot. Someone's already there, or I don't know, maybe that's just lying. I don't know. Also, another option.
Well, hold on to that one for a second.
Okay.
Because my challenge with that is like I'm getting to this place in my life where I don't like to give explanations when I don't feel like I need to.
Oh, you're in the section of life where you just say no.
Yeah, and like or I'm on my way, or I'm going to be a few minutes late. If I'm going to be late, I'll give an explanation.
That person just lost his friends.
But, exactly. Like I just, you know, like I don't like having to give more explanation than I feel like is necessary.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, you can't come over.
I mean, I get
like,
it.
Like, long, solid pause after that.
But here's the thing. What about this? Use your body language to convey that it's time to go. And kind of Marquez has a point. He says, doing things like packing up your papers or looking at your phone and commenting on how you told person X that you would be calling them at around this time are pretty overt ways of telling someone, I need this conversation to end.
Yeah, I mean, that's passive aggressive as well. And like, I will try and do
that.
There's
nothing wrong with a little passive aggressive shame.
No, passive aggression works in a lot of different ways. And like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like, oftentimes people don't catch those social cues. I do this with my parents when I'm on the phone. And I think I said this before. When I moved away to college, my parents completely forgot the social cues for I'm trying to get off the phone with you. In our family, it was always, well, all right.
You know what I mean? That's literally it.
That is literally me. The universal signal for I'm trying to get off the phone with you.
I do that all the time with Shira. But she's talking so much, and I'm just like, all right, Shira, well, I got to go do this real quick.
Yeah, it's always like a sigh and a, well, all right. But now, but like the moment I moved away to go to college, my parents were like, I would say, well, all right. And they'd be like, well, so did you talk to your brother about the, and I'd be like, Did you not hear the sigh, Will Allwright? Like, come on.
That is hilarious. So, I mean,
but the passive aggressive doesn't always work
it
is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, yeah. I get that. So what about this? Be polite, but direct to get rid of people when all else fails. So
that is, I'm totally with that.
It says start by apologizing and saying that you don't want to be rude. Simply state that you can't continue the conversation because you have another pressing matter to attend.
I completely believe in that. There have been times when I had to say to someone, like, after a conversation we've had,
yeah,
like, hey, I want to be clear. Like, I wasn't mad. I was just serious.
See, and that's a really good point to make.
Yeah.
Where it's, 'cause it sometimes feels like, and a lot of people, especially if you have sensitive people around you, they yeah. can take certain things wrong. And it's just like, no, I have no ill feelings towards you or the situation. It's just, I have to be stern about that. And I think that comes with growing up, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I think there are plenty of times when you have to get something across to someone in this kind of instance or in another kind of instance yeah. where it's like, yeah, I'm not upset. I'm just dead. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And like, I can't play around with
yeah.
this. So, I mean, being direct and clear, starting off with an apology is always good.
Right.
Like, oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry, but get the hell out.
I mean, that's honestly my way of doing it. I would just do that. But okay, so we have way more coming up with our question of the day, and Dr. Chris is actually going to come in and give us his insight on it. So keep on listening. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Now, that was Favorite Sound by Audion and Echo Smith, which we got to talk to. Well, I got to talk to. I'm super excited about it. It was such a great interview, and we actually recorded that video. So head over to WeAreChannelQ.com because that video will be uploaded V soon, which V means very. I just want to be a millennial. But no, we are continuing our question of the day with Dr. Chris, who is joining us. Now, okay, Dr. Chris. There are tough conversations. Oh, don't die.
I'm here. I literally slid in.
And Dr. Chris from Loveline. So our question of the day was all about, have you ever had a friend or family member overstay their welcome, and how did you handle it?
Ooh.
Now, I don't know if this has happened to you, but I would love for you to talk from the perspective of how do you handle uncomfortable conversations like that, or how do you tell your clients to handle uncomfortable conversations?
Okay, so I always frame it as those are the intimacy building conversations that really let you know whether or not you can have an honest, real relationship with someone.
Mm.
So if they're not able to tolerate or have those,
so true.
Then it kind of calls out that you don't really have the deepest, most intimate relationship, because a healthy relationship ideally is safe enough, and there's enough trust where you can say, hey, it's going to be hard to hear. It's kind of hard to say, but
get up out.
I need you to go. And I've had to have those with friends. I have a spacious place and people want to come stay with me, and I'll let them know. What I usually do is ahead of time, let them know what's comfortable. Hey, I'm comfortable having you for a night, but anything more than that feels overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of called out ahead of time. And if they're sticking around, I say, hey, I really need my space back. So
yeah.
I'm hoping I have somewhere else to go, but you have it. You just say it very lovingly.
I love where you started with that, saying like, this is how you know how much intimacy you have in a relationship with someone, because I think the way that they handle those kinds of situations is always very indicative of who they are,
right.
and what they believe. And I remember having a conversation with a guy that I was talking to, and like, we had like a significant disagreement on something, but like the way that he handled it, I was like, that was such a turn on.
That's
like,
right. He handled it because it was positive.
Yeah, because okay. it was positive. Like,
just check it.
It was,
you
like,
never know.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. No, right. No, because
I don't know your life.
We were really abusive,
exactly.
And that was attractive.
He's like, I loved it. No, I mean, because he was like, you know, that's not really what I intended, and I really want to kind of make sure that I'm clear about what I was saying and want to hear you and do. And like afterward, I was like, that was really hot.
You're mature.
Yeah.
I can trust you.
We were tweeting, on the Insta story, me and some friends today were saying, like, when a man says he has a therapist, I'm like, tell me more.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, those kinds of things where you can tell someone's
that's
maturity
right.
when you have a
yeah.
difficult conversation
yeah,
or something that's uncomfortable.
Only, that's the only time when it actually counts, right?
Yeah.
When things are easy, it's easy. And so I tell all the couples I work with, it's in times of conflict that you really realize how healthy are we as a couple and how much trust can I put in you? And also, do they honor boundaries? Because when you say to someone, I'm uncomfortable with what you said, or I need you to leave, it's also about setting a boundary.
Yeah,
and you learn
yeah.
about if they can handle boundaries.
You also get to see, go ahead.
Oh, no, you continue.
Well, you also get to see, like, in those difficult moments, how someone, the things that come out in those difficult moments, like the way that they talk to you, the way that they
yes.
handle you. Like, because sometimes you'll realize, oh, like, you've had a lot to say to me that you've been holding back.
Holding up. Oh
right.
my God.
You think I'm what? You think I'm a who? You know, like,
yes, I yeah. can attest to that. I think it's interesting also, Jared talked about Vanessa, shut up. Jared talked about the idea of just being comfortable with saying no and saying and establishing that and being like, hey, no, I'm not being rude, but I'm being serious.
And that's the thing. We're uncomfortable saying no because we're uncomfortable disappointing people. Because a lot of people take offense to that. I can't tell you how many times I've been trying to be very emotionally intelligent and honor myself and set a boundary, and people traumatize you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're not able to be told no. So and I have no like, idea what's happening over here. We got a little, what just came in for you? Because you were dancing.
Nothing. You know, okay. This is real good.
A private DM?
Stuff.
Private DM?
You know, God is blessing me.
Ryan just looked at his phone and something just happened.
My God.
And he's thrilled about
it. But no, I'm Dr. Chris, thank you so much for giving me your amazing insight. Thank you. You handsome man. What's coming up on Loveline tonight?
Oh, we have Dr. Tammy Nelson coming on. Her new book is about how cheaters themselves, it's geared towards the cheaters and them helping work through that issue that they've created. Because a lot of books are written for the person who's cheated on. This is for he or she who is cheating and how to manage the damage they've done. Do I stay in the relationship? Do I leave the relationship? It's a really powerful perspective.
That's such an interesting perspective to write a book for.
Yeah.
And to really offer like some advice because
I don't want to hear the cheater's perspective.
Well, no, but like,
normally that's the narrative, right? But,
yeah, exactly. And then you hear cheaters saying like, oh, I really messed up my relationship. I did something and I don't know how to mend that fence. Yeah. I don't know how to talk.
Usually left
person.
Out of the conversation.
Yeah.
That's so
interesting. Well, I'm very excited, and that's coming up right after our show, which we are wrapping up. Jared Hill filling in for Shira Lazar from Drop the Subject, which you did a phenomenal job, but you're a pro, so I'm going to stop giving you compliments.
Oh, no, I'll take them.
No, okay, cool. So you did very good, and guess what? You'll be back, and we have so much coming up tomorrow, which is great because you know what? I think there's this thing when it comes to, you know, being transphobic or being homophobic in our own community. And we need to really establish with all these like slang words getting thrown around, where's the line of being, what's okay and what's not okay?
Yeah.
And is there a license to use slurs? So we're going to go there.
We're going to go there on Let's Go There.
No, for sure. And thanks, guys, for listening. Get ready for Loveline with Dr. Chris, because, honey, we did that. Remember to slay always. And, yeah, I'm going to send you some love and light, too. Bye.